You're listening to the LifeScan Learning Lab edition of the Get Balanced podcast with Chief Todd LeDuc and your host, co-host here, Dr. Donnie. Episode 91.
Welcome to the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Hey, this is the LifeScan Learning Lab edition, and I'm just going to kick this right over to Chief Todd LeDuc to introduce our guest this week.
Hey, Donnie, great to be back with you. And I was telling you before we started recording, I actually counted, and believe it or not, time flies. This is episode 28 that we've taped or are taping. I don't know when this is going to air, but we're taping it during Thanksgiving week. So I hope by the time you've heard this, everyone had a wonderful and blessed Thanksgiving with family and spent a little bit of time just acknowledging the gifts that we all have received. So, but we've got a great guest and a good friend on the show today who's had some changes in his career that's brought him to a new position of not so long ago. And I'm excited about having him on and talking about his career, where it's taken him and where he is today, and the role that plays for us in public safety. So without further ado, I'm going to would love to welcome the superintendent of the National Fire Academy, Eric Skablix. Eric's great to have you on the podcast today. I want to start by asking you. Donnie reminds me, he's probably tired of hearing this because I start the show with this every time, but it's important for our listeners, I think, to know too that we've got such a wide audience, not just from across the United States, but internationally as well, that listen to these podcasts. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your career and how you got started? I know you've got some fire service in your blood, and where that's taken you in that journey up until today, where you're at the National Fire Academy.
Sure. Thank you. And it's good to be with all of you, and longtime listener, first time participant. How's that? So what I'll start by saying is a lot of people, when they see my name, will wonder why there's an S on the first name of my letter, Eric's. And my nationality is Latvian. So I'm actually a first generation Latvian. So my parents came over during World War II with their respective families, came through Ellis Island. So I actually read, speak, and write Latvian. And that ties into really my interest in public service, because my parents taught me the importance of helping others, because others in the United States helped them when they came here. So I was fortunate to grow up next to the Monmouth County Fire Academy in central New Jersey. And that was an amazing playground for myself and my brother and my sister, because when the recruits weren't there, then we got to basically play all over that facility. So we had a great time. And then one day a local police officer stopped by just to check and see what we're doing and to make sure we weren't getting ourselves into danger. And that local police officer, Toby Rowe, was also the local fire chief of the Adelphia Fire Company. So Howell Township Fire Company number one, which is a volunteer fire department formed in 1927. And he said, you know what? When you turn 18, you should join the fire department, the fire company. And I did that. So as a result, I became a volunteer firefighter, went through the fire academy where I played for many years as a recruit with a number of other people from departments in central New Jersey, and really just developed a passion for serving the community and also a passion for learning about the craft. So things that I had never done. So for example, using power tools, ropes and knots, all those kind of things that I didn't do as a did as a kid, but not knowing how to use some of those things that I learned how to do the right way in firefighter one. So just a great opportunity to give me a foothold in service and just something I was very proud of. The other thing being part of a volunteer fire company that relies relied a lot on fundraising was the ability to understand the importance of running a business, if you will, which is raising dollars to buy equipment, to buy turnout gear, to replace a couch in the fire station lounge. So things that, you know, you learn that money just doesn't grow on trees, right? So we were a fire company that was very active in fundraising. So it gave me the ability to work with a lot of people and to do those kind of things. So again, a really good base of experience for me as an individual, and also a professional, right? Because you learn how to work with other people from different backgrounds, from different diversities that speak different languages. So it was really a fun way to kind of grow up, if you will. So that led me as a volunteer firefighter. I became a dispatcher at the Monmouth County Sheriff's Office, focused in fire rescue communications. So the county was serving just under 400,000 people at the time through 127 fire stations, of which all but three were volunteer. So it was a great opportunity to kind of learn the fire service from that side of the shop while remaining to be a volunteer. So eventually my heart took me to Oregon, where I got married. I met my wife at Rutgers University. So she was friends with my cousin. So we started dating. I ended up moving out to Oregon, got married, and that was a great run there. Was a volunteer for Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue for a number of years, a very progressive combination department that does a lot of innovative things there. And then eventually my wife and I moved closer to where I worked, which was in Salem. So we moved to a community called Dallas. Dallas was about 16,000 residents. So we moved there because it was close to Salem, where both she and I were working at the time. And also I joined the volunteer fire and EMS department there. So throughout my years, I served a lot of different roles. I left there in October of 2020 as the deputy chief over a combination department. And what I really did over my time in the fire service, and I'll add that I was also a fire prevention education officer in Howell Township on a part-time basis. So I was responsible for school programs for more than 30 different schools in town. So really what that gave me was a lot of experience in a lot of different communities with a lot of different risks and hazards. So I was fortunate to work in urban, suburban, rural, and frontier environments. So that gave me a good base to work from. And then as my full-time job in Oregon, I worked for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training for 30 years. The last 10 as the director of DPSST, which is the agency acronym. But DPSST is a state agency, a cabinet level agency. So I was appointed by three governors to serve as a director, and I was very honored to do that and work with a 23-member board that we had appointed. But we served 41,000 public and private safety stakeholders. So police, fire, corrections, 911, private security. We were really busy. We had an amazing campus, 235 acres, just outside Salem. So we were very much in the middle of making sure that our first responders were not only well-prepared when they entered the service, but also well-prepared throughout their time in the service. So that's a quick thumbnail on me. And then, of course, did the college thing and ended up with a master's degree, a bachelor's in fire administration, a master's in public policy, and also a graduate of both the FBI Academy in Quantico through their executive development program, and also a graduate of the National Fire Academy Executive Fire Officer Program here.
You certainly have had, which is really, I think, you know, benefited us in public safety, such a diverse background of experience, both on the front lines, you know, on volunteer side, fire, our communications folks, which is an area we don't talk about enough, in my opinion, and then the law enforcement perspective. So, I have to really give shout out for those. You know, you mentioned the campus out in Oregon. Where you were the director, and I know I had the opportunity of going out and doing some training there with some colleagues. And what a beautiful campus you have there, and what a tremendous resource that really looks at multidiscipline. So fantastic. You really have had a legacy of educating first responders and not only in their initial stages, but for continuing to make sure they're prepared for all the challenges that we face. And I have to give a shout out. You mentioned Salem. Salem, Oregon is a new LifeScan Wellness Center's customer. So we're happy to be out in Oregon and have public safety partners. Eric, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your kind of your new role now. And I, you know, mentioned when I introduced you, you're the superintendent of the United States National Fire Academy. And for those of you that haven't had the opportunity to either take some of the educational offerings of the USFA or attend the campus, beautiful, beautiful campus in Emmitsburg, what a special treat. So I was wondering if you could tell us, talk a little bit about how you came into that role and that position and what's happening at US Fire and at the Fire Academy, and how folks can take advantage of that tremendous resource that's out there. And, you know, just from my perspective, I know a lot of departments just don't tap into that tremendous, really wealth of training and education. So let's talk about a little bit about how that evolved and where you're at today and what your vision is going forward.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So it was a perfect connection coming from Oregon to the National Fire Academy, which is under the United States Fire Administration, because as a state training director, I already knew the value of National Fire Academy programs, because each year the National Fire Academy delivers nine two-day classes to each of our states across the country. And we offer a number of six-day classes to each of our regions across the country. So Oregon was always thirsty for training and professional development opportunities. So I wanted to make sure that as a state training director that we were not only requesting classes, but also picking up classes that perhaps other states couldn't offer because of the campus that we had. So I knew the value of the National Fire Academy classes coming into Oregon for both our career and volunteer fire and EMS providers, because what it allowed to have happen was bringing in classes that were nationally recognized, that were coming from a national organization, but also bringing in instructors from other states. And that's not a criticism on anything that we were doing in our state. But a lot of times we kind of stay very close to home. And I always thought it was important to bring in other instructors, other classes, other topics. And you mentioned, Todd, that you came out for something that we were really excited to offer, which is a two-day session on first responder health and safety, not just physically, but also from the behavioral standpoint. So we always wanted to lean in and bring in other topics into our state. And the National Fire Academy allowed us to do that. So obviously, as a state training director, I always wanted to make sure the National Fire Academy was strong and robust. I also was fortunate to receive an appointment to be on the National Fire Academy Board of Visitors. So I did that for a number of years. And that is, in essence, almost like a board of trustees for a college or university. The Board of Visitors is established in federal law. It has a mission, and that is to ensure that the classes being offered at the National Fire Academy are professional, are relevant, and that the National Fire Academy is appropriately funded to deliver the courses that are desired by the fire service, and also that the infrastructure is up to par. So if you think about, you know, running a training organization, we often focus on the classes and the instructors and the students, but somebody has to focus on the big picture. So the Board of Visitors does that. And that's really my role now as the superintendent, is I focus on the big picture, right? So making sure that the classes that we're offering are relevant, making sure that we are reaching our first responders across the country. So we obviously have a beautiful historic campus here in Emmitsburg, Maryland, just about 15 miles south of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, in case your listeners don't know where Emmitsburg is. It's a small town that is very hospitable and a great place for us to be. The campus is almost 500 beds on campus, so we can have up to 500 students on any given day here. And there are a lot of times that we are at that capacity because we want to bring in our first responders and provide them with great professional development opportunities. But here's what's interesting that I'll share with you and your listeners. And this is one of the things that people think of when they hear Fire Academy. They think, oh, we're going to throw ladders and pull hose. And they go, how many fire engines and ladder trucks do you have at the National Fire Academy? Because you're the biggest. And the honest answer is we don't have any fire trucks here at the National Fire Academy. And you're not going to pull hose and you're not going to throw a ladder. And the reason is, if you go back to America Burning in the 70s, what was envisioned in America Burning was the creation of the West Point of the fire service, which is the National Fire Academy. So our mission and our purpose is to develop our current and future leaders of the fire service and not to replicate what's being done at the state and local level. So we're not doing firefighter one. We're not doing pumper operator. We're focusing on leadership classes, incident management classes. We very much embrace all hazards, all risk. We also move into the health and safety arena, incident safety officer, health and wellness. We also do an amazing fire investigation program here in partnership with the Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. We have a number of agents here assigned to us on campus, and we run one of the most premier fire investigation programs hands-on here in Emmitsburg. We also do fire inspection, community risk reduction is obviously one of our big staples here, which is let's give our fire and EMS providers tools to implement risk reduction programs in our communities so that fire departments don't have to go to tragic events involving fire and life safety issues. So again, that's kind of our place, if you will, and not to replicate what's already out there. So very fortunate to be here as a superintendent. It's one of those things that's very near and dear to me because not only have I been here as a student, right? I've taken dozens of classes, as have you all. But the other thing is realizing the importance this organization has on our nation's fire service. And as we talk about the campus, what the pandemic allowed us to do is to kind of take a look internally because we had suspended in-person classes here in Emmitsburg for about a year. Because of COVID guidelines, we knew that people weren't going to be flying. We knew that our first responder organizations weren't going to be releasing men and women to come to classes here at the academy. They needed them back home, either supporting vaccination efforts or even giving shots in arms. We also knew that people wanted to stay at home so they didn't get sick, right, by leaving their bubble, if you will. So we had to refocus our efforts. So we leaned in heavily with our state partners. So we reallocated classes scheduled to be here in Emmitsburg to the local level. So that allowed us to deliver an additional 100 classes across the country through those state partnerships. And we also moved into the virtual arena. And we moved into what I call kind of the baby step of virtual through Zoom. And not that Zoom is the end all be all, but Zoom, we identified about a dozen classes here, 2-day classes that were the perfect fit for Zoom. And that allowed us to continue to do training across the country for career and volunteer fire and EMS providers. What it also allowed us to do is to reach firefighters in rural communities that have never been to a National Fire Academy professional development opportunity. So when we say we're offering a class in point X in any given state, we know that depending on where you're at, that could be a 6-hour drive to and from for that 2-day class, which might mean some people don't attend. So Zoom took that off the table. Zoom said, look, you could roll out of bed in the morning, you could log in from the fire station. Again, you have to have internet. And we know it even in 2021, we have parts of the country that don't have reliable internet, but we did offer the Zoom classes on different time zones and we had really good success. One of the interesting things from last year is we reached 10,000 additional students than the year before. So we reached just under 80,000 students through different National Fire Academy programs, both online, virtual, and in person. So while the virtual has a place, it's not going to replace the in-person opportunities that you have to have that interaction in class, right? But we do see the virtual as a great arena for other classes that don't need those people sitting in the same classroom working on those issues. So that kind of gives you a little thumbnail about where we've been and kind of what we're doing.
Hey Eric, you mentioned health and wellness as one of those areas of training, and I know my listeners are they're shouting right now as they're listening to the podcast, going, Dr. Donnie, you got to ask him, how do you become evaluated to be an instructor at the academy?
It's a great question, Dr. Donnie, and one of the things that we are looking at, and it's an ongoing issue, right? We're obviously looking across the organization at diversity, equity, inclusion. So we want to make sure that the students coming to the National Fire Academy represent the communities we serve. We also want to make sure our instructor cadre represents the communities we serve. So we are leaning in heavily to recruit more instructors because we have a number of instructors that have retired from the fire service and have told us, look, we love being at the National Fire Academy, but at some point we're going to want to just enjoy our retirement and move on. So we need people in the wings. So the acronym I use coming out of a state program is we always want to have freshman JV varsity, right? We want to have new instructors interested in being here. We want to have that JV team that has already been instructing and comfortable. And then we have those varsity instructors that we can basically throw into the classroom and they know what are doing because they have that knowledge, skills, and ability. So what we really look at, and I would encourage anybody that's listening, just go on our webpage. We have an instructor portal. And really what we're looking for is for an instructor that's interested in working here to send us their CV. Basically, let us know what your interest is. So we would love to have people with a passion for health and wellness, a passion for all the other topics that we offer, say, look, I would like to share my experiences, my knowledge, my education in the classroom with National Fire Academy students. What makes it unique for us is that we are not a stand behind the podium academy. We are a facilitated learning academy where we want those instructors to basically immerse in the discussions with the students, but all of those students in the class bring their lived experience to the classroom. What makes us unique, I think, from other state academies, and this is by no means a criticism, but because of the National Fire Academy presence and the ability that we can bring in students from across the country, you can be sitting in a classroom with somebody from America, Samoa, Alaska, Florida, Illinois, Texas, and you're getting information from across the country in that lived experience. So it really creates lively discussions and amazing learning environment. So yes, if there's people out there listening that would love to teach for us, we'd love to hear from you. So send us your CV and then we'll be in touch with you and we'll walk you through the process. But we're always looking for people. And here's what I'll also say, because I get this a lot. I'll get emails or calls or just interactions at different conferences I'm at where people say, look, I'm an active health and safety officer. I'm an active clinician. I'm an active chief. I don't have time to take 6 days away from my job and come work for the National Fire Academy or 2 weeks. And I go, look, that is great. Can you give us 2 days? And they go, what do you mean? I said, because we offer each state 9 2-day classes, that's a couple of hundred classes that we're trying to fill up. We're looking for people that can be, if you will, weekend or weekday instructors for us and do a 2-day class. And it doesn't have to be across the country. We might have somebody from California that's more than happy to go teach a class in Arizona. So you know, that 2-day commitment for a career person that's actively working. And I'm not saying career firefighter, because, you know, we're looking for clinicians as well that are culturally competent in fire and EMS operations. But, you know, they're not going to take 2 days away from a practice, if you will, but they might be happy to do a Friday flight somewhere, teach a class on Saturday, Sunday, and be back at work Monday. So we're looking at various options. And that's one of the biggest things is just letting people know how they can be a participant in our instructor cadre.
I appreciate that. That's excellent. And I will check that out myself as well.
Yeah. Donnie, you'd be a great addition. My humble opinion, I think, you know, not only the instructors, but as Eric said, just the networking that goes on. And those are lifelong networks that you'll keep, you know, throughout your professional career and really just be able to bounce ideas and thoughts off folks from across the United States. So tremendous, tremendous opportunity. Eric, one of the areas you didn't touch on, I was wondering if maybe you could maybe spend a little bit of time for our listeners. You know, one of probably the most intensive courses I've taken in my professional development was at EMI, at the Emergency Management Institute, and it was the Advanced Public Information Officer course. Right. It was probably the most stressful, but the most immersive learning opportunity that I've had. And it formed a great foundation for me as a PIO, and also just dealing with elected and all the different stakeholders that you have to deal with in that role. But can you talk a little bit about EMI and where that fits into to the National Fire Academy and what opportunities may be there for listeners as well?
Oh, absolutely. So there are three amazing schoolhouses, if you will, that are part of FEMA. The United States Fire Administration has the National Fire Academy, which is my honor to serve as the current superintendent and lead an amazing workforce that's passionate about delivering professional development. Across the campus here in Emmitsburg is the Emergency Management Institute. Dr. Jeff Stern, a former career fire officer, EFO graduate, is the leader of that organization. And EMI also embraces the all-hazard, all-risk approach. So they offer classes that we don't, but yet fire and EMS providers will find great benefit in attending those classes because they are classes such as public information, being a PIO. There's also classes on evacuating communities during times of disaster. So if you think of the year that we've just had, so obviously we've been in a pandemic, but we've also had floods and hurricanes and wildfires. So usually when that call comes in, those local emergency responders, police, fire, EMS, and emergency managers working together to figure out how to do that. Wouldn't it be great to know how to do that before the call came in? So EMI offers those training classes to basically set that in motion. So a great opportunity, and tied in with moving people is also moving animals, right? Especially when we move out into our suburbs and rural areas, people won't leave their properties if they can't take their animals and make sure that they're safe. So EMI has classes for that as well. Obviously for fire and EMS, a lot of your listeners are very well aware of the incident management teams that occur, the IMTs. So EMI offers the position specific IMT classes that are of great interest. And then our third schoolhouse is actually in Anniston, Alabama, and that's the Center for Domestic Preparedness, or CDP. CDP is actually a hands-on campus, so they offer a lot of classes, especially in the weapons of mass destruction, chem bio, and especially for EMS, paramedic, medical providers, a lot of great opportunities there in person, and as well as hazmat providers. So just take a look at the web pages for all three of our organizations. So NFA, EMI, CDP. The great news is that everything we provide for your listeners is free of charge. If you are accepted to come to a National Fire Academy class, not only is it free of charge, but we will even reimburse you for your airfare. So your only cost to attend any of the FEMA programs is your time away from your job, whether you're in the fire service or do something else, and your meals while you're on campus, but that's it. That's the only out-of-pocket you have, and all three organizations offer amazing training opportunities. And I think, Todd, if I can, the one thing I didn't mention under National Fire Academy, but I will, and it was a segue from your EMI question, but I also didn't talk about the Executive Fire Officer or Managing Officer program here at the NFA. So I'll just share with you, EFO is a flagship program that we have for our current and future fire service leaders. EFO is being recalibrated basically to meet the needs of today. And I think both you and Dr. Donnie will appreciate this, but there are three pillars that make up the new EFO program. One is focusing on self. The second one is focusing on the organization. And the third one is understanding that person in the EFO program, focusing on community. So self, organization, community. We start with self because that's the most important part. And we talk about, you know, basically having that life work balance that enables those men and women that are in leadership positions to be successful, right? They also have to focus on the men and women that they lead. And then they also have to focus on their community. So that recalibration is pretty exciting to watch. And it's not a criticism of the previous EFO program, but we needed to refresh it. We needed to kind of make it current for 2021. So we do focus quite a bit on the individual, because if they're not doing well, then obviously the organization and the community suffer. And sadly, as we know, the family of that person will also suffer. So we want to make sure we're doing the right things there. And then for company officers, we have a similar program called Managing Officer, where we also focus on that individual, their health and wellness, their work-life balance, and those kind of things, in addition to being a successful leader at the company level.
Now, that's wonderful to hear. And I heard a couple great things there. Our listeners will hear Donnie and myself talking all the time about the great resources of Assistance to Firefighter grants and SAFER grants that's out there. But really, this type of educational experience being paid for is a tremendous gift to the fire service, and one that each organization really should take a hard look at saying, are we identifying our up-and-comers and providing these resources to them to give them the greatest opportunity to succeed in their roles and positions. So great information. I'm thrilled. I know I can see Donnie nodding his head, thrilled as well with the retooling of EFO to have that focus on self-care. We know how important that is. And that really was going to be my last question I wanted to chat with you about. You've had a long career that's given you vantage points for public safety in general from many different spectrums. You brought it up, the focus on self-care and health and wellness, both physical, behavioral. Where do you think we are as a public safety space on that spectrum from maybe where when you started your career? And where do you see us going in terms of more work to be done Be curious to hear your thoughts on where we've evolved to and where we still have work to do.
I would say in the 30 plus years that I've been fortunate to be in the public safety field, it's been amazing to watch the changes from when I went through recruit school and, you know, where we've gone as an industry, as a profession, you know, not only from a technical standpoint, from the equipment available today, whether it's turnout gear, whether it's self-contained breathing apparatus, whether it's, the, you know, the trucks themselves with the, you know, addition of computers to make our lives easier. But also what's exciting, and I think we're just really breaking the surface on the focus on the responder, right? We very much have always been about the service, delivering the best service possible, getting to the scene as quickly as we can, to be efficient, to be effective, to be, you know, professionals when we arrive, right? So when you get off the rig, let's get to work and let's do our job well, let's learn our craft. But really, we're just starting to, over the last 10 years, I believe, and I'm not saying this because both of you are the co-hosts, but we really are starting to focus on the people that do the job. We, many years ago when I started, really didn't care about the person. I don't say that in a negative way, because we really didn't know what we know now, right? We know when we have seen very high numbers of suicides, of both firefighters and law enforcement officers and others in public safety more than died in the line of duty over the last 2 years, that we have much more work to do. Sadly, here in the Frederick County area, we're at the south central Pennsylvania. In the last 2 months, there have been two suicides of firefighters in the area, right? We need to, as an organization, not only the U.S. Fire Administration and National Fire Academy, continue to lean in into the research and into the awareness and into the education of how do we provide assistance, but also, as you mentioned, the FEMA assistance to firefighter grants, especially in the area of research and development, as well as AFG, to continue to make sure that people have access to not only cutting edge research, but also to take what's learned and apply it. So we're part of that conveyor belt, if you will. We're constantly mining the research that's being done by AFG grants and other partners across the country. We have a number of fire service organizations and a number of different individuals that are doing a lot of great work in here. We need to make sure that we're cultivating that and making sure that we're including it in our curriculum and making it aware to our students. So I would say that's the biggest area, is focusing more on self and on culture. So we talked about suicide. We also can talk about bullying and hazing. We know that we've seen both career and volunteer fire and EMS providers leave the service because of how they were treated. When we look at diversity, equity, inclusion, we want to make sure that we have a respectful professional workplace that includes and invites everyone to be a member, whether it's a volunteer fire department, a volunteer rescue squad, or a career organization. And I think we're making strides in that direction, but we still have much work to do. So I think, you know, while the technology has moved forward, the equipment has moved forward, we need to do the same thing, and we are, but we need to continue, not let our foot off the gas pedal on that focus on the individual, their organization, and even their leadership. Right. So we want to make sure that the company officer, that field training officer, that first person that makes an impression on that new individual does it in the right way. And not it's that they mean to do bad. Right. But they just don't know what they should be doing today. So the more we can lean in and keep that going, I think we're going to be in a better place. And it's pretty exciting. Now I know some of your listeners and some of our students say, you know, we're treating these new folks like snowflakes, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You can come up with whatever kind of term you want. And I've heard that all, but what we have to understand is that our workplace has changed. Our workplace changes every decade. We just may not realize it because we're in it, but we need to make sure that we're bringing in the best and brightest, but we also need to make sure that they have a servant's heart and that we're teaching them the traditions and values of the fire service, which is doing a good job for the person calling us, right? It's not the macho side of it, but it's doing the right thing for the right reason and just focusing on that human aspect, which we do well in most cases, but in some places we could do a little bit better. So it's kind of focusing on those things. And I'll just share what I love doing is on the last day of the safety culture class is sitting in, because what all of our students coming here do is they give a 15-minute presentation on something they're working on in their organization regarding safety and health. So in many cases, these are people that I would call pioneers, which are not afraid to have the difficult discussion with their chief or with their organization about changing culture to make it more safe, more healthy, et cetera. So those are pretty well received, and it's nice to see kind of that discussion happening. And then of course you get to kind of round it off with another 30 people in the class that can give you their input. And then usually at the end, everybody says, can I have a copy of what you're working on? Cause we need to do this as well. So it's pretty exciting to see kind of that innovation hub happening here at the National Fire Academy, and obviously across the country with our partners that are doing really great work in this field, and where we're focusing on those men and women providing the service, which is just as important as the fire truck that they respond to, the turnout gear that they are wearing, or their air pack. And I would say probably more important, because without that person, all that other stuff doesn't make any sense. It's just going to sit there, and you have a fire truck and you have gear, but we have to have men and women operating that equipment and wearing it to be effective and successful.
Yeah, well said, Erickson. You know, it's having 34 years in the service myself, it's refreshing to see, you know, leadership positions with folks like yourself and Dr. Lori Moore Merrill, our new fire administrator, that I know are very focused on taking care of our people. And you just said, you know, when I had a wise mentor pull me aside one day and recalibrate me early in my career, that you can have all the trucks and the resources and gadgets, but if you don't have healthy and well employees to take care of, as Chief Bruno used to say, Mrs. Smith, when the time comes to serve our community, then you don't really have an organization, or you don't have a healthy organization for sure. So I want to thank you and all the U.S. Fire Administrative team that is working to embed these type of issues into the leadership culture of our current and future leaders across the country. It's continuing to make that difference and make it a healthier and safer service. So thank you and your team for all you do.
No, it's glad to be here with both of you. The one big thing is for your listeners, just look at our webpage, U.S. Fire Administration. Our research information is there. Our prevention information is there. Our folks at National Fire Programs do a great job. And the one thing for the National Fire Academy and for U.S. Fire Administration, it's free of charge. We don't charge for anything that we do, right? You will pay your taxes, and that's what funds us. So please take advantage of what we're looking at, and we'd just be glad to share anything that people want. So thank you, both of you, for your time, and thanks for allowing me to be on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on, Eric. And we'll certainly look to have you back on for a future episode. And as we wrap up today, I couldn't echo more, having attended classes at NFA over the years. Take the time, look at that resource and figure out, if not only for yourself, but for your organizations, how to get your folks plugged in. It's really a great opportunity to develop your team and make it strong and cohesive and bring leadership, you know, that's focused from a national level. So thanks, Eric. Have a wonderful holiday season to you and your family, and stay safe.
Yes. Thank you, Eric.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balance program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.